The Pope was at lunch with boisterous relatives in the Archbishop's residence in Turin. "Eat, Giorgio," the old lady told him. "No, no, I have to watch myself," he protested, refusing a second helping as the six cousins and their families, more than 30 people in all, roared with laughter. It was June 2015. Even before his election 2 years earlier, Francis had lost the lanky, tall figure he had had for decades in Buenos Aires, and now at 78, with the sciatica pills and the pasta, and no longer being able to callejear, to walk the streets, as he used to, he had filled out. But not for Signora Carla. "But what do you live off?" she remonstrated. "You eat nothing." He is a pope of the people, for the people, but most of all, he is a pope with the people. It is what everyone, admirers and enemies alike, notices about Francis. His natural affinity with the human race, the way he turns people you wouldn't look at twice into subjects and protagonists. Some say he is a populist in an age of populists, but that is to misunderstand populism. He is not using his at-oneness with the people to create power, for he rejects that kind of power. He does not offer boundaries to protect people from perceived threats, but doors and bridges to expand their possibilities. He is captivating and energetic, but humble. He makes mistakes and asks forgiveness. His mission is to take the church to the people, in order to not just save the people, but to save the church. The people, he likes to say, are infallible in their believing. They may not be able to tell you why they believe in God, but they know God. People like old Carla, whom he knew from regular visits over the years after he was made Archbishop of Buenos Aires in 1998, when he began to fly at least once a year to Rome for meetings, usually in February, his Lenten penance, and would sometimes add on some days around Turin. From there it was 2 hours into the hills around Asti, the Fons et Horago of the Bergoglio clan, where he enjoyed cookouts with cousins in the village of San Carlo in the region of Tiliole. So now, on his first visit to Turin since he was made pope, there is no shortage of locals who can say what he is like. One is San Carlo's parish priest, Don Angelo Franco, who describes for local TV the pope's excellent Piedmontese dialect and his enthusiasm for the local dishes, the ravioli and the bagna cauda. "He may be Pope, and he may be Argentine," Don Angelo declared on television during the papal visit of June 2015. "But you could see he was still a humble Astigiano, like his father and grandparents, full of humanity." This was time out for Francis, like Jesus stopping in Bethany with his old friends before leaving for Jerusalem to turn the temple tables. Francis came to his grandparents' city not long before his visit to the United States, where his most ferocious critics had their bunker. Among the ordinary faithful, his popularity and prestige were at their zenith. The media still painted him as the reformer pope who had set the church on a bold new gospel path, facing resistance from a corrupt old guard, a simplistic narrative that had so far held. And while the tide of angry opposition was already visible, its force had not yet been felt in petitions and accusations of heresy. His Vatican reforms were battling institutional sclerosis, but had not yet stalled. Nor had bishops' mishandling of abuse in past decades yet erupted into the public eye with devastating force, as it would 3 years later. There was even a feeling, partly because of hints that Francis himself had strategically dropped, that his would not be a long pontificate, and some of the old guard in the Vatican had been persuaded that they just had to batten down the hatches and wait for the Argentine storm to pass. In fact, it was just building its strength.
Thank you for listening to this clip provided to you by Macmillan Audio. To hear more, look for this title wherever audiobooks are sold.